Mazzara and Parra project to Amimora. Herrera, Cabrera, don't let the Bay that scare ya. Machado or Bono or no.
Wow, did we have an eventful night in Major League Baseball and Fantasy Baseball. When Chris Bryant's 3 home runs and 2 doubles were like the 8th most important thing to talk about from yesterday, in my opinion, you know we had a busy night. Welcome to Fantasy Baseball Today.
Well, what are we even supposed to talk about with Chris Bryant's game?
You know what's
interesting? It was good. It was a great game.
No, there's an angle there. It's just funny, and we can do this a little bit later, to compare where Chris Bryant was in the third base rankings, or standings rather, before yesterday, and where he is now, and what this 3-homer game and 2 doubles have done for Chris Bryant.
Is the takeaway, if you score a lot of fantasy points in one game, you will move up in the rankings?
The takeaway is that arguments about players can be framed so differently depending on one day, you know?
Yeah, oh, I know. And I know it, Adam.
Well, who had a 3-homer game about 2 weeks ago? Remember?
Franklin Gutierrez.
No, Victor Martinez.
Franklin Gutierrez did have a 2-homer game.
I said 3-homer.
Ah.
Listening
that's
skills.
That's what I get for not listening.
Yeah, so Victor Martinez, he also hit 2 home runs on Sunday in his previous game. In between those 5 home runs over 2 games, he went... He had 6 hits in 9 games with no extra base hits. So, you know, it's just interesting. It's funny how sports works, isn't it?
That's why we should react less to individual things and look at the big picture.
The big picture is pitching is pathetic and pitchers suck and I hate pitching. That's the big picture.
Danny Duffy's pretty good.
Danny Duffy, that was one heck of a start. Oh, man. I don't know if anybody was following me and Heath on Twitter last night, but I cannot deal with those Royals broadcasts. I cannot take it.
I'm going to do this from now on. Whenever I'm watching a Royals game and Rex Hedler says something ridiculous, I'm going to just tweet it to you.
What did he say yesterday?
Well, he says lots of different things. I mean, I sent you about 7 or 8 of them last night.
Yeah, that's funny.
My favorite might have been after a strikeout. Whoa, man, Duff is tough.
That's a really good impression, actually.
Thank you.
That is good. What he really bothered me with yesterday was he said something like, the Royals are pounding Adam Wainwright. And like, no, they really weren't. It was a lot of singles. It was a ridiculous double by Eric Hosmer. It just took like a high bounce over first base. They were not pounding him at all.
I'm going to throw that cape on for Adam Wainwright, huh?
We'll talk about him. All right. You know what? Forget that. Let's get into Noah Syndergaard and Jake Arrieta. Steven Matz, Clayton Kershaw, Jeb Samardzija, we're doing the Worryometer! And you can email us at fantasybaseball@cbsi.com. fantasybaseball@cbsi.com. So, Noah Syndergaard says, I do not have a bone spur in my elbow. All the papers, well, at least some of them say, yes, he does. It's pretty clear that he does. And he struggled yesterday. 5 runs on 7 hits, 3 walks, 5 strikeouts in 3 innings. Syndergaard is the number 10 starting pitcher in fantasy in both points and roto formats. All right, 0 to 10, obviously no dropping here, but 10 is like, I'm freaking out, and 0 is he's totally fine, no problems at all. Noah Syndergaard.
Our good friend Jeff Zimmerman did clear that up, by the way. He says that every pitcher has bone spurs. The question is whether they've broken off or caused pain.
Okay.
So I think he does have a bone spur. If he doesn't, that might be the problem.
Well, okay, there's a problem there, though.
So 10 is... dropping?
No,
on the worryometer?
No. This is different because these are no drop guys.
Okay, so 10 is what?
10 is like, I'm very concerned. I might have to sit him. This is bad. There's no way I'm trading for him. You know, that's a 10.
Okay. For Thor, I will go with a 4. 4 for Thor.
I mean, I would say I wouldn't feel very comfortable trading for him.
Yeah. It's a good way to put it.
But that doesn't mean I'm like, as a Syndergaard owner, I'm not like freaking out or anything.
There's at least 2 guys on this list that I would trade for him. So
that you would give up to get Syndergaard.
Sure. Yeah. Yes. Uh-huh. He is not one of the 3 best pitchers in baseball. So yeah. Yeah, I guess put me down for a 4. I'm not sure what a 4 means in this context, but it sounds good.
Okay. So I will read you a couple of trade offers that our listeners emailed us with. How about Doug in L.A.? First of all, he says, "Dear Mel, Flo, and Alice." Do we know them? And he says, "Kiss my grits."
Mel, Flo, and Alice. Man, I feel like that's the Brady Bunch.
There's a TV show called Alice. Is that based on the...
Oh, was that the housekeeper from the Brady Bunch? Because her name was Alice, and I think Mel was the guy that ran the butcher shop. It was her boyfriend.
It could be. Is that a spinoff?
I wonder if it is.
Were there grits involved?
Maybe, but... Well, okay, we'll get back to that. But here's the question. Give up Noah Syndergaard, get Carlos Correa. Who would you prefer rest of season? It's a keeper league, by the way, but let's do seasonal. Syndergaard or Correa?
Think I'd still rather have Syndergaard
than Carlos Correa?
Think so.
Like, would have rather had Correa in the draft. I would rather have Correa.
I guess. I mean, I'm of the opinion that we were overvaluing Correa in the draft as a first rounder anyway. I'd rather have Correa.
Heath, you want to look big picture here. Let's talk about what has changed since draft day. Shortstop is a lot deeper than we thought, and pitching is a lot worse than we thought.
And Carlos Correa is not as good as we thought.
He's been really good for the last month.
Okay. Let's talk big picture. He's hitting 260.
Okay. I still have him as my number two shortstop, and I still feel very confident in that the rest of the way.
Okay.
Okay, so that seems like a fairly fair trade offer, but I honestly don't know. I would have to be blown away to make a trade for Syndergaard right now, and maybe I'd completely regret that, but I'm worried.
Well, I think the bigger thing with Carlos Correa is I feel fairly confident that he's not going to start his next game and leave one inning in and be done for the season. I don't feel that confident that's not going to happen with Thor.
Well, then how could he only be a four? Like that. All right. It's not that you think that's going to happen. It's that
no.
We can't eliminate that possibility.
Exactly.
Right. Right. I agree. So I think you gotta be blown away to make a trade for Noah Syndergaard to acquire him. What was the other one? The other one was Springer for Syndergaard. Who would you rather have?
I'd rather have Springer.
Yeah, it's a weird thing where I wouldn't want to give up Springer for Syndergaard. I would want to be getting Springer for Syndergaard either.
Chris just won't make that trade, which is kind of the way I've found Chris to be when I've tried to make trades with him.
Doesn't make him? Man, just stubborn guy.
I trust in my guys. Yeah. I got my squad.
He's loyal. Okay, how about Jake Arrieta? It's really just a control issue. Everything looks the same as it did last year. Strikeout percentage, ground ball to fly ball ratio, line drive percentage, home run to fly ball ratio, BABIP, BABIP, called strikes, swinging strikes, all very, very similar. He's a number four starting pitcher in points, number two in roto. Jake Arrieta, worryometer.
Zero.
What I really love about the new stats that we have, and I'm a 0-2, he's throwing more pitches in the strike zone this year, according to PitchFX.
Which we've kind of noticed that there's not a real strong correlation between how many pitches you throw in the strike zone and how many walks you have, which is weird.
it depends on your ability to induce swings outside of the strike zone.
Yeah.
Interesting. All right. So this is a guy that if anybody is worried about it, yeah, you pounce all over that and you take Jake Arrieta.
Uh-huh.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. Steven Matz. He might not start tomorrow. You gotta stay away from Matz, right?
Seven?
Yeah, I mean, you know, bone spurs are weird because you can pitch through them. It's a question of pain tolerance. It's probably not a situation that's going to get worse, but it's probably, I'm not a pitcher, I'm not a doctor, neither one of those things, but it's probably really hard to pitch well with a bunch of pain in your elbow.
And I would say, like, this is totally made up by me, but my opinion is... If the bone spur hurts too bad to pitch,
glad you finally admitted it.
If the bone spur hurts too bad to pitch in this game, then I'm concerned more so than I would be if he has a bone spur and it hurts, but I can pitch through it. Like it's already hurts too bad to pitch. I would think that puts him much closer towards the have surgery on it than Noah Syndergaard with his bone spur that doesn't exist.
Clayton Kershaw, minor back ailment.
More remote control cars.
I mean, the only time he's missed a start in the last, 7 years was with a minor back ailment. So I guess that is a true thing, but it's not a reason for concern, I don't think.
Okay. And Jeff Samardzija, 0-10. Should we make 10 a drop for Jeff Samardzija?
I don't think you should drop Jeff Samardzija. I am only mad because I was convinced to move him up in my rankings in around 30 a couple weeks ago, and I should have just left him in the 40s. That's where he belongs. He needs to be on your roster. He's going to have games like this.
Stretches like this.
Okay, stretches.
But
all the other pitchers suck too.
Well, the thing is, he's starting to be bad on the road. This was a home start last night for Samardzija, and his second consecutive start allowing 6 runs with only 2 strikeouts, but most of his bad starts recently have been on the road. Earlier in the year, Samardzija was great at Colorado. He was good at Cincinnati. He was good at Arizona. So it looked like he was really turning the corner and you know, being great everywhere. Now it's I wonder if I'm just starting him at home or favorable ballparks.
I would definitely prefer to start him at home. I think the real takeaway is that Jeff Samardzija is not that good, which is the story of his career.
Yep.
He looks good occasionally, but for the most part, he's had one good season.
Okay, guys, let's dive into it. Yeah. Let's get into it here because we got a tweet of the day from Mark. So excited for the MLB debut of Nationals phenom Lucas Giolito. Autocorrect of the day right there. So yeah, Giolito's coming up.
I don't think I've ever had Giolito.
What?
Right? Just never had it.
Why?
That's like the Italian ice cream, right?
No.
But not like the Italian ice.
You definitely had Giolito.
I don't think I have.
We had Giolito together.
Oh.
When did we have? Oh, we did.
Yes.
Yeah. There was a food truck.
Not pleasant.
Yeah.
Oh, no, it wasn't good?
No, I want ice cream.
I had cookies and cream Giolito. It was pretty good.
Honestly,
made a total mess.
Giolito is good, but it's just like, it's like 75% of ice cream. It's like.
What's the difference?
I don't, it's just not as good. It's like, it's fine. It's just not as good.
Do you
I don't
use
think it's
eggs
as,
in Giolito?
I think Giolito is not milk or not dairy based.
You use eggs?
I don't know that, but it's not as good. There's no reason, unless you're lactose intolerant. Like, Giolito should be marketed solely to lactose intolerant people.
Yeah, no, I think marketing it as like the Euro ice cream, that probably boosts sales.
So
they put it in like these fancy boxes.
Lucas Giolito is going to make his major league debut today. He is going straight from AA to the majors to face the New York Mets. What do you guys recommend for fantasy owners? Is this someone that should definitely be added?
Pretty much a must add. I mean, as with all the success we've seen rookie pitchers have this year, you got to run out and get this guy.
I mean, look, he might not be fantasy relevant. He might only make one start. It might not work out, but someone in your league needs to add him. It might as well be you.
Okay, here's my question. This is something I've struggled with in a lot of my leagues. I've got Blake Snell.
Mm-hmm.
I've got Jameson Taillon. Mm-hmm. I've got Julio Urias. I'm dropping all three of those guys for Giolito just because he hasn't failed yet.
I think you're probably dropping Taillon.
Whoa, whoa, whoa. Urias is the easiest one because he's got one or two starts left. So they say.
Okay. What about, I don't have all three in the same league. So I've got them in various leagues.
I did not drop Taillon for Giolito. I dropped Liriano for Giolito.
I mean, Blake Snell's been bad.
Yeah. I would drop Snell. In a second, I'd drop Snell for Giolito.
My problem is these guys were all very highly rated prospects.
Mm-hmm.
And with what I believe about baseball, I don't think 3 or 4 bad starts changes that.
Agreed.
So if I liked Blake Snell more than Giolito coming into the year, or the same, and I think Blake Snell's got a spot in the rotation for the next 2 months, and this is probably just a one-start thing for Giolito.
Well, I don't know about that.
Why?
Because, look, Strasburg wasn't supposed to miss a start, then he wasn't supposed to go on the DL, and now he's on the DL. Gio Gonzalez has been terrible.
Yeah. I mean, maybe. I think it's more likely that Blake Snell makes 15 more starts than Lucas Giolito.
I agree completely. Here's the question, though. Who's picking up Blake Snell if and when you drop him?
Maybe not. Maybe people will just let him sit on the waiver wire until he has his first good start, and I hope I'm the one that just happens to notice first.
Yeah, I mean, he hasn't been great, but he's got a 3.54 ERA. I think people can look at that and say, like, there's reason for some optimism. If pitching,
he still has a 3.54 ERA.
If pitching's as bad as you guys are making it out to be,
he's been terrible.
Someone's got a crappy pitcher.
How does Blake Snell have a 3.54 ERA?
He doesn't pitch deep into games. He gives up like two or three runs. Yesterday, he gave up four. His first start against the Yankees was really good, but he doesn't throw strikes. He can't throw his curveball for strikes right now. I don't know. He's 73% owned. You can make decisions on who you want to add and drop, but I guess the big question is for Giolito. Heath, you believe this could be just a one and done?
I'm afraid it will be, yes. But they've not said that.
Yeah.
I think he has a little bit of control over his own destiny.
Although,
I mean, we know how much
maybe not all that much control over his own pitches based on how his double A season's gone.
Yeah.
And we know that Dusty Baker really likes young players and the energy they bring to the club.
well, they're not. I feel like they're not playing that well right now.
No, they're definitely not.
They could use an infusion here.
Also, that was sarcasm about him liking young players.
Right,
just to make sure.
If he's as good as we think he is, it'll be hard to take him out of the rotation.
Right, it's true.
He is probably a better prospect than everybody we've mentioned, though, right, Giolito?
Everybody but Tyone, right?
I thought he was more highly regarded than all of them.
I think Tyone's like the number three prospect in baseball. There's not that big of a difference.
Okay. Urias, pretty good prospect in his own right.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
All right. So look, let's see where it goes with Giolito. He's 72% owned. Trey Turner played center field at AAA.
Ben Revere noticed and had a monster game.
Yeah.
Three steals. The Dodgers are going to call up starting pitcher Brock Stewart. I don't know. Anything interesting here?
I don't believe so. No.
The numbers are pretty good.
Yeah.
Numbers are good. 1.47 ERA this season, 10.4 K per nine. Yeah, I mean, worth a look, I guess. He was a sixth round pick. I can't honestly say I've heard all that much about Brock Stewart, but the numbers are interesting.
That's probably because he was pretty awful last year in high A.
Yeah.
Like, terrible. 5.43 ERA. In 18 appearances.
California League?
Yes.
California League's a tough league.
Yeah, well,
everyone pitches poorly in California League.
The major leagues are a tough league, too.
Hey, man.
California Penal League.
Not as tough as the California League.
But isn't it funny that like all these prospects come up, they all do poorly, and then you got this Daniel Mengden character who's done pretty well, and he's like 50-some. He's owning 20% fewer leagues than Lucas Giolito. You know, who would you rather own right now if you were taking a shot? They're both on your waiver wire, Giolito or Daniel Mengden?
Giolito.
All right.
I moved Mengden up in my rankings a little bit, but
I feel like it's not going to last.
No, it's not.
He's kind of gimmicky with that delivery he has, and but right a while it's hot. So the Mets worked out Yulieski Gurriel, and we'll obviously get some more reports on him as that Cuban slugger will eventually get signed. All right, fellas, time to play a game. What will Adam have for dinner tonight? You guys can choose. You have the power. Will I have ginger pork burgers with black bean mayo and green beans, enchiladas with summer squash and salsa verde, or fried chicken and kale slaw with roasted sweet potato wedges and hot honey?
Kale slaw.
Yeah, it's interesting.
That is interesting. So it's like coleslaw just with kale?
Yeah, yeah.
As long as the kale's not cooked, I would probably go with the fried chicken and kale slaw.
I mean, that whole meal sounds like fried chicken, roasted sweet potato wedges, hot. That sounds pretty, but can never go wrong with enchiladas and salsa verde either.
Yeah, I think those are by far and away the top two choices. We've eliminated...
I'm glad you said that because I had the ginger pork burgers last night and they were freaking amazing. But this is what I love about Blue Apron. I am eating things that I would never ordinarily eat. You get ingredients. I'm not going to go to the store and buy kale and sweet potato wedges, enchiladas. Like, this is great. They send it right to your door. You've got all this variety to choose from. And, you know, I haven't read any seafood dishes, but Blue Apron does have plenty of those, like wild-caught Alaskan salmon. You can make your own menu. You go on the website. You choose the meals you want. Blue Apron gives you variety and flexibility. The seafood is sourced sustainably. The beef is raised humanely. The chicken is free range. The pork is raised naturally. So you're cooking with better ingredients. They're better for you and they taste better. That is the perfect combination. There's so many things to love about Blue Apron. It gets me cooking with my fiance. It saves me money. It's under $10 per person for a healthy, delicious meal. You get seasonal recipes, pre-portioned ingredients, easy instructions, and, like I said, a delicious meal. Check out this week's menu. Get your first three meals free with free shipping by going to blueapron.com/FBT. You will love how good it feels and tastes to create incredible home-cooked meals with Blue Apron. So don't wait. That's blueapron.com/FBT, as in fantasy baseball today. blueapron.com/FBT. Blue Apron, a better way to cook. I seriously love it, guys. I really want everybody to go out there and try it. So here's the big news. Aledmys Diaz, he fouled the ball, you know, hit the ground, bounced up, hit him in the face. He has blurred vision. They don't think it's too bad, but let's hope for the best for Aledmys Diaz, who's been hitting really well and could be a great guy for all we know.
Sounds like he went to the hospital after the game last night, but they do believe he avoided, they were afraid that he fractured his orbital bone, and it sounds like he did not.
DJ LeMahieu has no structural damage in his knee. He might be able to avoid the DL. Trevor Story sat with a bruised finger, and he said he was feeling better. The Red Sox sent Eduardo Rodriguez to AAA. Pardon me, I do forget the name that was mentioned as a potential call-up, but the Red Sox have an interesting pitching prospect who's been pitching very well. I don't know if you guys remember. I'll look it up in just 1 second. Jonathan Papelbon started a rehab assignment. Vince Velasquez had a great start. Why did he leave so early? He was on a pitch count. We will talk more about Velasquez in a little bit. Robbie Ray left with a blister. He's actually been pitching pretty well lately, and the control's been a lot better, and he left with a blister yesterday.
I wish he would have got the blister after the sixth inning, because he threw six very solid innings, only giving up two runs, and then gave up two in the seventh before the blister appeared.
Adam, I believe you are referring to Aaron Wilkerson?
Yeah, I think so.
Who has a 2.0 ERA in 85 and a third innings between AA and AAA this season. Mm-hmm. However, it's worth noting he is a 27-year-old.
Okay. That is certainly worth noting. Joe Girardi, still concerned about CeCe Sabathia's ankle, and if you play in a daily league, I understand if you started him with the two-start week in a weekly league, but I have Sabathia in a daily league, and I'm pretty sure I'm sitting him tonight against the amazing Texas Rangers with this ankle injury. So, you know, be cautious. Garrett Richards and Andrew Heaney both had MRIs. So the two starting pitchers for the Angels, they have torn UCLs. Neither of them had Tommy John. They both had stem cell injections instead of Tommy John. Richards is doing pretty well. He's going to be reevaluated in 6 weeks. Heaney not doing as well. He'll be reevaluated in 2 weeks. Wilson Contreras started in left field. Again, he went 2-for-4. And I am so mad about what happened with the Yankees game last night. It was BS.
I know. I cannot believe they let Joe Girardi call for the tarp to come on the field in the middle of the game. That was BS too.
The umpires did a horrible job, but the Yankees got screwed out of a win. It was really stupid.
But if they would have called or delayed the game when they should have, then the Yankees were down 4-3.
No, they weren't. No, they should have called it then. They should have called it when they were up 5-4.
Of course,
it wasn't raining that hard when it was 4-3.
Eduardo Rodriguez could not find his footing on the mound. They kept having to come out. No, earlier in the night.
Eduardo Chichi,
yes.
Yeah.
They're basically the same guy. Just one of them throws right-handed. And then if they would have just let the game keep going and not delayed it when they did, Chapman was going to blow that save.
Chichi Gonzalez, by the way, is the pitcher. Chichi Rodriguez is the golfer.
Yes, that's factual.
No, it was they resumed the game at 2:15 in the morning. That's so stupid.
That's because they were getting a protest from the Rangers if they didn't.
Adam, not everybody wakes up at 5 in the morning.
Well, I do, and I woke up. I went to sleep. They were winning. I woke up. They lost. That was really ridiculous.
Chris watched the end of that game with dinner.
Yeah, with his Blue Apron. All right, so
I went to sleep early last night, sir.
We have some other pitchers that I think are interesting that you could consider picking up here. Blake Snell is not necessarily one of them. He's one of our fringy starting pitchers. But John Gray, I think John Gray's just been outstanding. I was a little afraid this week because he dealt with the arm fatigue and he struggled in his last start. But 7 innings, 4 runs on 5 hits, no walks, and 8 strikeouts against the Blue Jays at home. That's pretty good. And I don't know, guys. If John Gray were available in any league, I'd be picking him up.
Must own.
John Gray's an ace.
Ooh.
He's not a fantasy ace because he pitches half his games in Coors Field.
Right.
But he's an ace when he's on the road, and he's usable at Coors Field, which you can't really say for that many pitchers.
Do you think of the three guys that really had good games last night, and I'm going to include Gray because it was against the Blue Jays at Coors, do you think that John Gray is better than Duffy and Bauer?
In a neutral context, absolutely.
Okay.
But in a fantasy context, who is
But in a fantasy context, I think he's third among that group. But I think he is worth owning in all leagues.
I think I might have him ahead of those guys just because you know when you – I mean, I know when I can start John Gray.
Yeah, I mean, if you look at the numbers in his career, he's got like a sub-2.6 FIP on the road. I think he's got like a sub-3 FIP at home. It's just FIP doesn't matter at Colorado.
Danny Duffy's interesting. You know, he's 80% owned. And I've watched the last couple of starts. I'm sure, Heath, you've watched more than I have. But even when he was struggling, as he did in his previous two starts, you're watching Duffy and it's like, dude, this guy is nasty. How is he struggling? And then last night, he was not struggling at all. He was really, really good.
Well, he's got a limited repertoire, right? I mean, it's intentionally limited. He stopped throwing, I believe he stopped throwing his curveball.
No, he was definitely throwing his curveball last night. Yeah. He's throwing fastball, curveball, changeup.
Okay.
I think the changeup was kind of what went away maybe for a while. And maybe the curveball did for a while too. He was definitely throwing it last night though.
Okay.
Well, he was great last night. 8 strikeouts and 8 innings, 2 runs against the Cardinals.
This is a guy that I picked up for a 2-start week and then dropped because I've seen Danny Duffy tease this so many times. But man, he sure looks legit right now. His emotions are under control. He's pounding the strike zone, repeating the motion. I think the biggest thing that helped him was not going from the windup anymore.
Okay, according to Brooks Baseball, he's throwing a slider much more often than the curveball.
Okay. Right.
The curveball has been kind of removed from the repertoire, and it's a slider instead. He's a power pitcher now.
Okay.
It's fastball, cutter, slider, changeup.
Yeah, so here's something interesting. If Danny Duffy were facing the Padres or the Cardinals, who would you prefer him face? If you were a Duffy owner, who would you rather him face, the Cardinals or the Padres?
I would still prefer that he face the Padres.
Yeah.
The Padres? Because I think the Padres have the 6th highest OPS against lefties and the Cardinals have the 6th lowest.
Right, that's correct.
Isn't that weird?
Yeah.
It is weird. I understand what you're saying. I still think I'd rather him face the Padres. Especially a strikeout pitcher like Duffy, because he could put up 12 strikeouts against the Padres.
Yeah, I just wonder, you know, looking at last night, do we need to put it in context that the Cardinals are not that good against lefties? And maybe it wasn't that hard of a matchup.
Oh, I don't think it was that hard of a matchup. No, I think that's fair.
Okay.
I think it was a more difficult matchup than, say, Trevor Bauer against the Braves.
Oh, yeah. However, the most encouraging thing for Duffy that we didn't even mention, he's thrown over 100 pitches in 2 straight starts. He's no longer an 80-pitch pitcher.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool. So I was talking about pitchers to pick up, and Duffy's 80% owned. Gray is 68% owned. Daniel Megden, Robbie Ray, 56% owned, 48% owned, respectively. What do you guys think about them two, Megden and Ray?
I would expect Ray will be better for the rest of the season, but I'd probably rather start Megden next week.
I mean, Megden's minor league numbers are actually pretty solid.
Yeah.
He's not that old. It's not like he's been old for his systems, but he's got a 2.87 career minor league ERA with a strikeout per inning. Before getting called up, he had a 1.19 ERA between AA and AAA. He's interesting. You know, it's a good place to pitch. It's not necessarily a good place to get wins, but it's a good place to not allow runs. Their defense sucks, which hurts, but I think I'd rather take a flyer on him than Robbie Ray's sort of proven mediocrity.
Well, Ray's usually good when he's not walking people, which he hasn't been lately. And I'm sure that he's only owned in 48% of leagues. He's owned in that many leagues, rather, because of the 2 starts.
Yeah.
But he's been pitching pretty well. Only 4 walks over his last 4 starts. So 2 of those starts were against Philadelphia. Take it with a grain of salt. For me, Ray is more like, all right, let's see where this goes. Seeing some positive signs. Megden is, with how bad pitching has been, I've got to pick him up. And a couple of guys that I considered dropping yesterday were Scott Kazmir and Francisco Liriano, who played against you, faced each other, and had some good moments and some bad moments. And I decided to drop Liriano to pick up Giolito. But But would you guys drop Kazmir or Liriano to pick up Mengden?
I mean, if you drafted Francisco Liriano, it was probably because you thought he'd be able to start for you, and you haven't been able to use him yet. I don't know if I'd be opposed to dropping
him. I'd definitely drop Kazmir for him. I'd have to really think hard about Liriano.
Liriano has been so bad.
He's got the highest FIP in baseball, I believe.
Wow. I mean, he has been so bad. Kazmir gives up four runs with two or three walks in the first inning and then was really good after that. I just feel like you're grasping at straws with either of them, but I feel like there's been much more positives for Kazmir than Liriano.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I guess this is this is the point in the year where it becomes really fuzzy how much you count the player's career or last two or three years versus what they've done this year.
Yep, right.
Yeah. And Francisco Liriano has been quite a bit better than Scott Kazmir.
Yeah.
Well, okay. And I don't necessarily agree with that because I think the book is out on Kazmir that he, prior to this year, he had been like really, really good until, I don't know, mid-August, and then everything just falls off a cliff, which is what I was expecting for him this year.
So if we're to mid-June and he's not been really, really good, what's left?
I mean, that's the thing. Neither of them are all that encouraging. Liriano never throws a lot of innings either, you know? He hasn't even gotten hurt yet.
Right.
But Liriano's been so much worse than Kazmir that at some point you have to ignore the past. Yeah. And I guess I reached that point yesterday. There have been 12 weeks of excuses to drop Liriano, and I haven't. Until yesterday, I finally reached my breaking point. I can't do it anymore with this guy.
Yeah, I don't think that's unfair.
Agreed.
Okay, so other players that you might want to pick up. How about some deep league targets? Tell me if you're interested in any of these three. They're very, very available. Tyler Naquin at another good game. Lonnie Chisenhall, been pretty solid lately. And Bryce Brents, who is playing right field for...
Covered him in college.
Where?
I covered him in college.
Did you?
He played at Middle Tennessee State while I was covering FIU baseball. So they went head-to-head quite a bit. Well, old Sunbelt action.
He's slugging 804 games for the Red
Sunbelt
Sox.
Sunbelt,
Funbelt. Yes, that's what everybody calls it. Naquin, Chisenhall, Bryce Brents.
Naquin's just been hitting all season, really.
No.
He got
demoted.
He was really bad. He wasn't hitting that poorly when he got demoted, was he?
Yeah.
It was just that he wasn't playing every day. There wasn't a spot for him.
I think he was hitting pretty poorly. He's been great since coming back up.
I have some trivia for you.
Okay.
Amongst players with at least 130 plate appearances this season, who do you think has the highest BABIP in baseball?
I would guess Tyler Naquin.
It is Tyler Naquin, 458.
That's pretty high.
Okay.
If you're hitting 328 with a 458 BABIP, you're like a 250 hitter.
I do apologize, though, to Chris, because he was right. In April, yeah. Naquin hit 341.
Yeah, he's been productive whenever he's had the chance. Now, he's right. It's probably not sustainable, but he has been consistently productive. The issue was just that they didn't have a place to play him.
He's got a 277 ISO.
Yeah.
He does?
A 277 ISO. Guess what his career high in the minor leagues for a season in ISO is?
180.
You're a little high.
150.
167. That was actually a half a season in AAA.
Yeah.
I just, like, it's been a great run. I don't see, he's got a 31% strikeout rate, an ISO that's 110 points higher than any season he had in the minor leagues, and a 458 BABIP.
Yeah.
There cannot be a bigger recipe for, like, yeah. This guy's not this good.
Yeah.
Yep.
I'm not arguing he's this good.
Well, that
it's just weird that he's been hitting this good and is still only 14%.
Yeah. Well, look, that's how I framed it yesterday, right, Heath? I said I picked him up. I'm hoping to get one good week out of him. I don't expect much more, but you ride Tyler Naquin while he's hot, I guess. Chisenhall, Bryce Brents, whatever.
Yeah, I don't know anything about Bryce Brents.
Yeah, I think he was a first-round pick or maybe a second-round pick, but his career just kind of fizzled out. I think he's been hitting better over the last couple of years, but I don't think there's much. I think he had a sub-800 OPS in AAA before getting called up, so I don't think there's too much there.
Next category. This one is called Don't Delay, Act Now, Supplies Are Running Out.
Is that a Smash Mouth?
That is Smash Mouth. Good for you.
That is the second Smash Mouth reference on a CBS Sports podcast in the last week.
What was the first?
The Ion Basketball. They were talking about Smash Mouth about a week ago.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
They get kind of wacky on that show. So, yeah, basically the premise here is these guys are somewhat available, somewhere between 40 and 70% owned. Do you feel like we need to pick them up now before they're 80 to 100% owned? Let's start with Devin Travis. Devin Travis is batting .274 with 5 home runs in 28 games, slugging .491. He's 69% owned.
He's been absolutely red hot since, like, I think he was really bad for like the first 12 or 15 games coming off the DL, which isn't that surprising because he was dealing with a shoulder injury that had cost him, what, 9 months? But ever since that, once it clicked, it clicked. I think he's probably close to must-own.
I think he's definitely must-own, and I guess at 69%, he's owned in all roto leagues.
Yeah.
He's,
I mean, head-to-head, he doesn't strike out.
I'm just trying to decide if he's going to be a top 12 second baseman.
That's tough, yeah.
Because I have a hard time calling the 15th best second baseman must-own.
Yeah,
but I think he's probably going to be top 12.
Hitting at the top of that Blue Jays lineup with his contact abilities and his you know, decent but not great power and speed combination, yeah, I think he will be.
I think there's only one fair question for Chris here.
What's that?
Devin Travis or Gene Segura?
Devin Travis.
Devin Travis or Jonathan Scope?
Devin Travis.
I definitely agree with the Jonathan Scope part. Chris is just... continues to underrate Gene Segura, so
I don't know. I think Chris might be right about Gene Segura. He finally had a good week, but he's been pretty bad for.
Well, I mean, you look at, like, basically from the last time he was at Coors Field until this most recent time at Coors Field, he hit like .250. He was Gene Segura again.
Yeah,
I don't know.
Not really stealing.
Well, I mean, you're discounting Gene Segura's Coors performance, but then we're just praising Devin Travis for hitting a home run at Coors.
No, I'm praising him for being good.
Devin Travis is not homered at home yet, by the way. Hopefully there's some of those.
Devin Travis is not a home run hitter.
Right. That's something to keep in mind.
I think he's someone you could look at for 15 to 18 homers in a full season.
Next up, Marcus Semien, 53% owned. Believe it or not, Marcus Semien is the number 13 shortstop in points, number 12 in roto. He's having a nice little year, and he's 53% owned.
I believe it.
Semien or Johnny Peralta?
I will take Peralta.
Peralta.
Semien or Ledmus Diaz, pending injury?
I'm Diaz. Assuming Diaz is okay. I'll take Diaz.
Okay. Semien or Eduardo Nunez?
I've got Nunez.
Nunez.
All right. So it's tough to crack the top 12.
Yeah.
At shortstop. These next two guys are owned in 42 and 43% of leagues respectively. They both were, you know, 100% owned basically last year. Kendrys Morales, another good day. Mark Teixeira homered in 2 straight games. Do you feel like we need to act now? Supplies are running out on Kendrys Morales and Mark Teixeira.
I don't think there's going to be a huge movement to add either one of these guys just because they were so bad earlier. And then Teixeira missed all that time with injury. I feel like it's more likely that Morales is going to help you the rest of the season than Teixeira. But
yeah.
both of them are kind of borderline guys in standard points.
Yeah, I think it's worth adding Morales, especially. He's been really good this month, but it's also like I'm not that excited about adding him.
Fellas, I don't remember the lineup I gave out on the show yesterday, but I feel like it was really good. I know I had Michael Franco. He had a good day. I had Trevor Bauer.
The FanDuel lineup?
Yeah, the FanDuel lineup.
Okay.
I know I had Carlos Gonzalez. I feel like I had a big day yesterday. I almost put
Chris Bryant in my lineup. Boy, let me tell you.
you're just a couple of days away from being able to remember if you had a good day or not.
Is it that close to happening?
I think it's pretty close.
That's terrific. We're really hopeful here in New York. But listen, you get Chris Bryant in your lineup, and then you see him have a day like that, and then you immediately go to your phone or to FanDuel.com, and you see how much money you're winning. Because you know, like, that's just a really awesome, special thing that happens on FanDuel. It's really, really cool to have one of those lineups that just clicks. Everything falls into place. Part of the thrill of playing daily fantasy baseball on FanDuel.com. It was interesting that the three most expensive pitchers were horrible yesterday, but that's why you go with Trevor Bauer against the Braves. And FanDuel is a lot of fun. It's a small commitment. Contests start at just $1. It's competitive and it's challenging and really easy to play. If you're intimidated about getting into FanDuel, don't be. It's so easy to set a lineup. You're listening to a fantasy baseball podcast. You obviously know what you're doing. So go to FanDuel.com. Get started right now, or if you've already been playing, keep on playing. Enter your first league with our promo code HOMERUN. One word, no spaces, HOMERUN. Enter your first league, either win a cash prize in that league or you're going to get a refund on your money up to $10 for additional play. So go to FanDuel.com, click the microphone in the upper right-hand corner, and sign up with our promo code HOMERUN on FanDuel.com.
Big contest going on there this week.
What you got?
Single entry championship. You're playing in bigger tournaments, but everybody can only play one entry, so you don't have to worry about if you're just playing one and everybody else is playing 50.
Oh, wow. That's good. That is good, yeah. Those people, those nerds like Heath, submit 30 lineups a day, you know.
I don't know why that makes me a nerd.
Nah, it doesn't.
Well,
I'm just jealous.
Nerd.
Okay.
Yeah. So are these guys having legit breakouts? Matt Shoemaker, Danny Duffy, Marco Estrada, Trevor Bauer. Now, before you guys quibble about, well, he's already had his breakout, let's just, maybe I didn't phrase it right.
Are these guys having career years?
Are they legit? Are they legit? Are they going to be reliable starters for you pretty much rest of season? Matt Shoemaker, Danny Duffy, Marco Estrada, Trevor Bauer.
I want to gripe about one thing with Marco Estrada, because the over-under on that game was 12 yesterday, and I was like,
and it went over.
John Gray and Marco Estrada are good pitchers. Why is the over-under so high? And then the bullpens came into the game.
Yeah,
but still, they gave up seven runs in 13 innings between the two of them. That's not that far from 12
the
over 18
innings. The rest of the pitchers only have to give up 6 and 5 innings. The rest of the pitchers only had to have a 9 ERA
to get
them there.
4 and 5 innings.
You had to give up 4 and 5.
I felt the same way on that game.
Marco Estrada's good.
I don't understand Marco Estrada. He should
read Jonah Carey's piece from early May.
He should have about a 4 ERA.
He shouldn't.
He really should.
He shouldn't. He is. Look at the BABIP is consistently low with him.
It's 60 points lower than
infield fly ball rate is consistently high with him.
That's good.
He is a legitimately good pitcher and a pitcher who is capable of outperforming his peripherals because of the way he pitches.
I believe he's capable of outperforming his peripherals. I don't believe he's capable of maintaining a 189 BABIP against.
I agree.
If it goes up 60 points, his ERA is going up a lot.
Sure.
And it should go up 60. It should be 260 the rest of the year.
Okay.
And
that makes him a 4 ERA pitcher?
His
FIP is 4.05.
He's done a really nice job the last 2 years.
Hold on.
Right.
His FIP is 4.05.
That's true. His XFIP is 4.61.
Yeah. So what do you think is more predictive for him? He outperformed his FIP by 1.3 runs last season.
That's
true. He outperformed his XFIP by 1.8. And he's a legitimately different pitcher.
He might be the next Dallas Keuchel that's just going to wait until next year to suck.
Maybe.
But he didn't suck last year.
No, Keuchel had 2 good years in a row. It's really hard to do. But
what scares me about AL East pitchers is what scared me about Chris Archer last year, and he really struggled down the stretch. Just trying to look up. I mean, look, from August 29th on, there's at Baltimore, at Tampa Bay, at the Yankees, home against Boston, Tampa Bay, at the Angels, at Seattle, the Yankees, Baltimore, at Boston. Like the Yankees for 4 games at home, Baltimore for 3 at home, and at Boston for 3. Those are the last 10 games of the year for the Blue Jays. That's your fantasy championship. So AL East pitchers scare me a little bit. I don't know what the Yankees are going to be like at that point. They haven't been a very good lineup thus far.
Listen, I want to clarify. Marco Estrada has been a good pitcher this year.
I'm sending you the story.
I understand that he's doing some things differently and he is going, but I don't believe that you can be a flyball pitcher in Toronto and continue to keep a home run rate below 10% and a BABIP under 200.
What if you get infield fly balls on 18% of your fly balls?
That will help.
Not a thrower.
It's about arm slot. It's about the fact that he comes over top. He's getting a lot of backspin on the ball, which causes batters to get under the ball. It's just like the simple physics of the way he pitches causes batters to expect the ball to come down, and it doesn't.
His margin for error is about the same as his strikeout rate last year,
and his strikeout rate is league average this season.
Right.
He's improved.
What about Trevor Bauer? What about Matt Shoemaker? Oh, man, Shoemaker is so good.
I The interesting thing about him is actually his last two starts are the first two since May 16th where he has not thrown his splitter more than any other pitch. He threw his fastball more than his splitter each of the last two starts, and he was still pretty good.
Yeah. I've been noticing that because I got him on at least one team, and I've been trying to watch him. I don't know. I don't know if it's going to be legit, but the thing is, like, how can you not be excited with the garbage we've seen this year? How pumped are you if you own Matt Shoemaker right now?
I mean, I would certainly be still high on Matt Shoemaker.
Sure.
But I think the problem you're going to have is that people are going to look at his season-long ERA at 4.12, and they're just going to be like, he's 3-8 with a 4.12 ERA.
I bet if five owners made this trade offer, I think one might have it accepted. Matt Shoemaker for Noah Syndergaard.
No way.
Yeah, I can't imagine.
I feel like it would happen once.
He does have a 17% swing strike rate since May 16th.
Honestly, I think his splitter is one of the best pitches in baseball. Maybe I'm crazy, but
the way he, I would say the way he uses it probably makes it that way, because a lot of pitchers have really good pitches and then they won't throw it that often, or, you know, it's like Jose Fernandez curveball and you can only throw that pitch so much. But this, you know, he seems pretty comfortable throwing the splitter as his number one pitch. And we've seen other pitchers do that.
We have a lot more to get to, so let's move on. Three up, Chris Bryant, Jason Kipnis, and Joey Votto. Bryant with six RBIs, five extra base hits. So yeah, this time yesterday, 24 hours ago, Chris Bryant was the number five third baseman in Roto and number six in points. Now he's number two in Roto and number three in points. And I remember, Heath, you had that Twitter poll last month or whenever. You said, who's going to be the number one third baseman in fantasy rest of season? Arenado, Machado, and Donaldson. And I remember Donaldson came in last place in the poll. But right. Chris Bryant, does Chris Bryant deserve to be in that discussion?
I think he's right on the outskirts. And it just shows you how good third base is and how disappointing the outfield has been. Because I think you could almost rank Chris Bryant as high at outfielder as you do at third base.
Yeah.
What's really interesting about him is he's cut his strikeout percentage from 30.6 to 22.6 this season, and his batting average is only 3 points higher.
So
his BABIP has fallen 74 points.
Well, does that mean that it should go up and he's going to start hitting? He's batting 278, Chris Bryant. Do you think he's batting closer to 300 in a month?
Maybe, but I also think the fact that his home run to fly ball ratio has gone up would probably lead his BABIP to go down a little bit. Maybe not 74 points, but maybe he was a little too high last year. Maybe he's a little too low this season. But you often see really good power hitters won't have great BABIPs.
Yeah, I think 280 is about where he belongs. Maybe 290, 300.
It's funny when you compare Chris Bryant's numbers to Nolan Arenado, the number one third baseman. They have a lot in common. Arenado's batting 16 points higher. It's not a huge difference. They have the same amount of home runs, 21. Arenado has 8 more RBIs, I think 2 more walks, but 34 fewer strikeouts. And it's really more of a statement of how good Arenado's walk-to-strikeout ratio has been this year.
And his BABIP's probably like 60 points lower, right?
That I don't know. I only know BABIP. Jason Kipnis, guys. I find Jason Kipnis to be one of the most confusing players in fantasy. What is he? Does he hit home runs? Does he steal bases? Does he hit a ton of doubles like he did last year? He's not really having that good of a season, but he is having a pretty good, like, 10 days. Kipnis is the number 14 second baseman in points, number 13 in Roto. What is your take on Kipnis, who homered yesterday?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know that he's having that bad of a season. If he scores 80 runs, drives in 80, and hits 20 home runs, that's pretty good at second base.
Yeah.
Except he's not even in the top 12 right now.
That's more about the fact that second base has been way better than we expected, right?
It's guys like Jason Kipnis that make it difficult for me to think Devin Travis is going to be a top 12 second baseman, because I don't think Devin Travis is going to be better than Jason Kipnis.
Yeah. It's interesting.
It is.
It looks like we should not expect the stolen bases to ever get back to the 20 or 30 of what he was. I mean, he's only attempted 5 all year.
Yeah.
I think we're kind of hoping he gets to 10 this year, which hurts him in Roto a little bit, I guess.
Well, a lot of things hurt him in Roto. He's kind of a doubles and triples guy. He's not a home run guy. He's not a steals guy.
Yeah, I mean, he's on pace for more than 20 home runs this year.
Yeah, that's true. It's been very recent, but that's true. He's got, he's got 2 home runs in his last 11 games, 3 doubles, 2 triples. I don't know, yeah. Like 20 home runs, is that even worth noting anymore? It's like
at second base, yeah.
Yeah?
I think so. How many second basemen are going to hit 20 home runs this year? 6?
Yeah, no, you're right. Well, Cano will. Altuve might.
Altuve will for sure.
Odor will. Scope will. Odor won't?
Are we sure Jose Altuve is going to hit 20 home runs?
All right. Okay, you're right. It's not necessarily that they'll hit 20. They're going
to
be
I'm pretty sure Heath only said that to troll me because he gave me his Heath look after he said it.
All right, let's move on to Joey Votto. Joey Votto was just outside the top 12 at first base despite his 2 home run game yesterday. How do you feel overall about Joey Votto?
Chris, with maybe the biggest letdown of the DFS season, could not believe how cheap Joey Votto was against Jake Arrieta. I told him you should play him.
I didn't.
And he didn't do it. I would like to see...
What would you like to see?
I'd like to see Joey Votto do this for like a month. Like be really good for a month. I feel like we've gotten like 2 weeks
like
at a time.
For a calendar month?
For 30 straight days.
Because he's hitting .325 with a .471 on base percentage and a .538 slugging in the month of June.
No, well, for 30 days.
I looked at it since he left Coors Field. Since leaving Coors Field, Joey Votto, that was 21 games ago.
Okay.
315 with 4 home runs, 2 of them last night. 8 RBIs, and this is the best part, 18 walks to 19 strikeouts, because overall, his walk percentage is the lowest since 2011, but 1-to-1 ratio since leaving Coors Field, this could be legitimately Joey Votto getting back to what we thought he'd be.
Sorry, Heath, over the last 30 days, he only has 1,055 OPS.
Okay, so he's been good for a month now. Good. 2 more months and he might...
Literally what you said!
Good! What do you want me to say? He's a top 6 first baseman.
Okay. Thank you. That's what I wanted you to say.
What do
probably
you guys
7 since Posey's eligible, but
what do you guys think about Vince Velasquez and Joe Ross?
It was good to see Vince Velasquez pitch well coming back from the DL. I wasn't 100% sure he would.
And a really nice job bouncing back after a rough start from Joe Ross, I thought.
A rough start to the game, yeah.
Yes. Yeah.
I've been disappointed with him, though.
The strikeouts have not been what we expected.
Well, the strikeouts weren't really good last year, were they?
I thought he had more last year.
Like, I was kind of surprised why, and maybe that's why I'm more encouraged by Joe Ross, because my expectations weren't quite as high as everybody else. He's got 7.7 per 9. He had 8.1 last year. So,
okay. League rate has gone up, so it's a little worse. Than it looks, but yeah, I think he's someone because we expect young pitchers to improve. That the fact that he hasn't is disappointing.
Yeah, I think 90 innings is also telling. So if he gets one more start, let's say 96 innings, so it's probably on like 190 inning pace if he starts all season long, which isn't bad. But you like it. You like to get to 200 innings. He's not going deep into games. Is the
and there's not much reason to think he'll be shut down. He pitched 152 innings last season, so he can get to 200 pretty easily.
Okay, in the bullpen, a couple interesting things here. Will Harris has been fine, but he's struggled a little bit lately. He's not giving up the runs, but he's given up some base runners. Luke Gregerson, in his last 7 appearances, has given up 1 hit and 1 walk with 11 strikeouts in 6 2/3 scoreless innings. Wow.
Do you think Luke Gregerson is fixed, or do you buy into the old baseball idea that Luke Gregerson is a great setup man that can't close?
I feel like there might be some validity to that, but I have no idea.
I probably think he just had a couple of bad weeks. Like, I think he's pretty good. He's having a really good stretch right now. I think the bigger issue for the Astros when you look at the fantasy implications is it might be a situation where kind of like if you have 2 quarterbacks, you have no quarterbacks. I think it's like if you have 4 guys who can close, maybe you have no guys who can be trusted for closing for fantasy.
But Harrison's pretty much gotten all the opportunities, hasn't he?
Yes.
Right. But if he slides even a little bit,
Right.
Lou Gregerson's right there, you know.
I think Gregerson has already proven that he can't handle the stress of the job.
Just he's mentally fragile.
So you believe that all people that can be good setmen can be good closers?
I think there's a wide Venn diagram, and there are certain guys who fall outside of it, but I think it's a lot wider than you know, maybe old-timey baseball people believe.
Old-timey baseball people have injuries, news, and notes for you. Gregory Polanco, Gregory Polanco pinch hit for the second straight day. News out of Atlanta, the oblique strikes again. John Gant left with an oblique injury.
This is your best voice. You should do every podcast in this voice.
I would actually, if you did every injury news and notes like this.
You know what the funny thing is? Adam wasn't actually talking differently. He just changed the settings back to normal. That's what his voice actually sounds like.
Alex Rodriguez is likely going to sit against most right-handers going forward, which is good news for Yankees pitchers because it puts Aaron Hicks in right field and Carlos Beltran at DH. Homer Bailey made a rehab start. Atlanta called up a reliever who apparently throws about 100 miles per hour, Mauricio Cabrera.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. If Arodis Vizcaíno gets traded, who knows? Probably not, but I just want to bring this name up just in case. Josh Reddick should be back today. Sean Manaea is going to start tomorrow. Brandon Crawford rested with general soreness, and Lance McCullers is going to miss tonight's start due to a blister. He could pitch Friday. He could not pitch until next week. Some emails for you. This is from Beagle. Why don't you guys ever discuss pitcher home road splits when talking ad drops? Those stats matter.
I think for most pitchers, they don't matter that much. I mean, for there are situations where they do. There are some parks that are clearly better than others, but I think it mostly matters on the extreme edges.
I think we mention it when it matters. We talk about John Gray. We talk about Ian Kennedy.
Yeah.
I think as a rule, you can expect most pitchers are better at home unless they have a severe.
And they're just the thing is, there's just not that wide of a gap, you know, between like the five least or most parks aren't that big of a difference.
Well, you mentioned Ian Kennedy. I thought that was one of the guys I was going to highlight. The other would be Jake Odorizzi. He is good at home.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And terrible on the road. And that's not just this year. You know, he's always good at home. Sazid from Chandler says, hey, Benny, Wendy, and yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, say it. What is it?
Sandlot.
Yeah. L7 weenie. Getting a trade offer for my Greinke, I receive David Price. Who do you think will have a better ERA and whip rest of season, Greinke or Price?
I think David Price is the better pitcher.
That wasn't the question, Chris.
I would rather have him.
I'd rather have Price, too. I would not be surprised if Greinke has a better whip the rest of the year, though.
Yeah.
Grade the trade from Nicholas Altriste. Hey, Josh, Brad, and Carl.
2003 Florida Marlins pitchers. Right? Josh Beckett, Brad Penny, Carl Pavano.
Wow.
That might not be what he was going for, but that's where my mind went.
No, that's tremendous. Good for you. I made this trade prior to Noah Syndergaard's outing in a 14-team 6x6 categories league with OBP and innings pitched. I give up Syndergaard, Valencia, and Segura. I get Kershaw, Johnny Peralta, and Lonnie Chisenhall.
It's an A+.
No, it's not.
It's an A+.
I mean,
you are downgrading so much at your hitters, giving up Valencia and Segura for Peralta and Chisenhall.
Yes. I mean,
I don't know that there's a huge downgrade between Danny Valencia and Johnny Peralta.
Oh, please. Get over it. Danny Valencia is clearly really good.
Yeah, I think Valencia is good. I was more looking at it like Peralta versus Segura. I think that's you're losing one of the hitting sides, but the upgrade in pitching is so big, especially in an inning pitch league.
Yeah,
where
that's true.
Clayton Kershaw is going to throw 240 innings.
Yeah.
Also, okay, Danny Valencia is really good. He's having a very good season. He was very good last year. Are there a lot of people out there that like are? What's Danny Valencia's start percentage?
You know,
I think his ownership percentage is pretty low, isn't it?
I don't think so anymore. I wanted to bring this up because I think Danny Valencia is a perfect guy to buy while giving away your third baseman. Like, let's say you have a good third baseman, you have Chris Bryant or whatever, and you really need a pitcher. You trade Chris Bryant and, you know, run-of-the-mill starting pitcher Colin McHugh for Clayton Kershaw and Danny Valencia. I think Valencia, if you believe in him, which I do, I know Scott does. By the way, he is 83% owned, 73% started. I feel like...
Okay, there's more people starting him than I thought.
I'm not saying you exactly totally win that trade, but I think it's a fair trade, and I think it's a slight win. I think he's the kind of guy that 2 years in a row now, we're talking slugging percentage over 500, batting 290 last year, 335 this year. I think he's good.
Going back to the start of last season, 161 games, so a full season, 95 runs scored, 29 homers, 86 RBI. It's pretty good.
Yeah. Now we have to wait and see what he does today. Then it'll be a full season. That's it for today's show. FantasyBaseball@CBSi.com is our email address. I hate talking about interesting topics 59 minutes into the show, so I will probably bring up Danny Valencia again tomorrow. And make a case for Clayton Kershaw as the number one overall player in fantasy right now. Who would you rather have? Would you rather have anybody over Kershaw? That'll be on tomorrow's show, because I expect more horrible pitching tonight. For Heath Cummings and Chris Towers, I'm Adam Azer. See you later. Machado.